Okay, well, thank you so much, Suze. Thanks for the lovely meditation. That's a nice way to start the morning for sure. And a special welcome to the people we have that are new today. Really nice to see you here. And as Suze said, this is the second week of our monthly session on the eight worldly winds. And so I'm going to give a talk on that today. And last week, for those of you who weren't here, Jerry gave us a very nice introduction to this topic, identifying these pairs of four worldly winds and giving you some description of them: pleasure and pain, gain and loss, praise and blame, and fame and ill repute. And as Jerry told us, these worldly winds are a normal part of life. And we should expect that our experience is going to oscillate between the two. Sometimes conditions will be really pleasant and sometimes they won't. Sometimes there will be periods of abundance, sometimes periods of loss. Sometimes we'll be praised and recognized for the things we do, and other times maybe we'll be ignored or even be criticized. And, of course, our actions have some impact on what we experience, but no matter how careful we are, or how good we try to be, or how careful we try to be, or how much we try to control things, we're always going to be subject to these changing conditions because that's the way things are in human life. And I think if the pandemic has taught us anything, it's really taught us that. So these worldly winds are a real training ground for us to help us to recognize change and impermanence and to help us to develop patience and equanimity so we can learn to be steady even in the midst of changing and difficult conditions. So this week I'm going to go into a little bit more detail on these four pairs of worldly winds and what they can teach us and some of the complications of working with them. And just going through this, I feel almost like I've got like almost too much stuff to try to talk about. So it might seem like I'm bringing up all sorts of things from all over the place to for you to consider, but hopefully it'll kind of make sense. And we have another week to talk about it too. Suze is going to be teaching. So these first two pairs, pleasure and pain and gain and loss, for sure, they're familiar to all of us in life. And I think they're also pretty familiar to those of us who are practitioners in terms of working with them in a Dharma context. We've been considering them a lot here at SIMS. For those of you who've been around for a while, we looked at pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral qualities of our experience, and we looked at craving a lot as a part of our series we had last year on dependent origination. And in our Dharma and Daily Life series, we've been talking about things related to them too: wealth and abundance, habits and patterns, addictive mind, death and dying. All of those have a lot to do with pleasure and pain and gain and loss. And we experience them in so many contexts. And in every moment in our lives, in our physical bodies, in our emotional lives, with the different objects we encounter as we go through our days, in our relationships, everywhere we see them. In our bodies, for example, sometimes we feel strength and energy and pleasant sensations, but we also can feel the pain of injury and sickness. Our mental and emotional lives too. There's pleasure and pain. And in fact, one of the four foundations of mindfulness is to really look at just this aspect of life. We're encouraged to investigate the pleasant and unpleasant experience. And we know that gain and loss are inevitable too. Sometimes we're doing well financially, sometimes money is pretty tight. You know, we buy a new house, but pretty soon things start to go wrong. Maybe the roof needs to be repaired, or the water heater goes out, or like me, my washing machine died. We experience the joys of close relationships. But these change too, or sometimes end. You know, children grow up, they leave home, our parents get old, and eventually they die. We might go through a divorce or a breakup. So sometimes we're able to really rejoice in the things we love and cherish, and sometimes we lose them. And so we're really invited to investigate the truth of impermanence when we consider gain and loss. You know, things change and we can't always get what we want. And even when we get what we want, we can't hang on to it forever. And it's a hard thing to learn, but one we really learn with these worldly winds. So with these two pairs of worldly winds, pleasure and pain and gain and loss, when we experience them, we're really forced to look at our own tendencies to crave and to cling, to feel aversion and upset when things don't go the way we'd like them to go. And we also experience the pain of feeling those difficult emotions of craving and aversion. And that's really important too, because when we feel that pain and we see over and over again how these experiences come and go and how much it hurts to try to insist on what we want, even when it's changing, even when it's disappearing, we start to know the relief that comes from not trying to cling to only that good side, that upside of things. So when we learn that, we do find a place of balance and equanimity. Now, the next two pairs of these worldly winds are praise and blame and fame and ill repute. And these two pairs are also really familiar in our everyday life, but they might feel a little bit less familiar in terms of the Dhamma context because we really don't talk about them so much. And in a way, you know, of course they're pleasant and painful and all of this too, and there's gain and loss in these pairs, but they have a little bit different emphasis from pleasure and pain and gain and loss. Because they're all about relationship and image, how other people see us, how our community and our society sees us, how we see ourselves, and how we want all these others to see us. So with pleasure and pain and gain and loss, a lot of times we're dealing more with what we want and what we don't want, getting what we want or not getting what we want, getting what we want and losing it. But with praise and blame and fame and ill repute, it's more about what people think of us. So we especially are kind of exposed to a clear view of where we're identified, where we get caught up in our ideas of self, our ideas of how we want to present that self to the world. And of course, we also feel the pain of all of that, wanting to present ourselves in a certain way to the world. And in fact, you know, I've found, you know, thinking about this subject, that something that's really striking about these two pairs is how much pain we can feel around them, even about things that are really pretty trivial. You know, situations that at least certainly are no threat to our physical health or survival. You know, we might feel like we're not really all that worried about receiving praise for things we do, but then when somebody else is singled out for praise and nobody says anything about us, well, you know, the reaction can be pretty surprising. Those little voices pop up. What about me? Isn't what I did just as good? What's so great about that other person? Or maybe what's wrong with me? I thought I was doing okay. Maybe I'm not. All of this kind of stuff we feel. You know, or when we're criticized, or not even criticized, but just ignored. Surprising reaction. And I've noticed this recently in my own experience, a sort of embarrassing story I can tell you. So one of the things I've been doing lately is the Tricycle Magazine Haiku Challenge. And some of you might have seen this in this magazine. So in this challenge, every month they give you a season rare, and you're supposed to write a haiku about it and then submit it. And then they choose and print the best haiku. Now, of course, I'm not doing this challenge to try to write the best haiku and win the challenge and have my haiku in tricycle. Although, of course, that would be nice. And I totally don't expect my haiku to be chosen out of all the different haiku that are submitted. I'm just doing it because it's kind of fun and it helps me to be a little bit more aware of nature and the seasons, and it helps me to actually write haiku, which is a good thing to do. But even so, you know, every month when I submit my haiku, there's this little voice wondering, what if my haiku did win this month? And then the next month, when I look and see what our new season word is and see the winning haiku, and of course, mine wasn't chosen, no surprise, but still that thought comes up. Well, what was wrong with my haiku? What's so special about this haiku that won? Or, I guess my haiku really are pretty blah. I don't even know why I'm writing these haiku. They're just not that good. Or maybe I just kind of dismiss the whole process and sort of say, well, you know, the point isn't to win anything. I don't want to get caught up in this. This whole process of these season words is kind of artificial, and I might not even see this season word thing in my ordinary life. And isn't the point of haiku to write, to capture an actual moment of my experience, and so on and so on and so on. And I also find myself not really looking at the haiku that are chosen, not paying attention to the tips for writing haiku or the reasons given why the haiku that was chosen is especially good. So I don't really pay attention to the advice that is there that might help me to improve. And so, you know, on one hand, I can tell myself that this is wise avoidance and I'm just not getting caught up in comparison and judging and competition. But if I'm really honest, I know there's also a little bit of that feeling of that little kid that's kind of saying, well, I can't win, so I'm not going to play. I'll just take my marbles and go home. So there. And, you know, it's embarrassing to know that those feelings arise. But it just shows how sensitive we can be. And, you know, I laugh at it. It's silly. I don't spend a lot of time worrying about it for sure. But it's just, you know, illustrative of how these feelings come up, even in really silly situations. So these pairs of praise and blame and fame and ill repute can be really challenging because they're so intimately linked with our feelings about ourselves, and we can just be so sensitive. And they're also challenging because they're associated with relationships and with society and all the complications that those bring into the picture. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about these two pairs specifically, starting with praise and blame, which are maybe a little bit easier to relate to than fame and ill repute, since they're something we experience every day from the people close to us, our family, our friends, our coworkers, our teachers, our supervisors, and so forth. And sometimes it's really clear why we're receiving praise and blame. I mean, we've done something good and we're recognized, or we've done something that's not so good. So it's not surprising that people aren't that happy with us. But at other times, it's really hard to know what to make of the praise and blame we receive. You know, we might do a presentation and a lot of people like it, but others, you know, not so enthusiastic. Or one friend loves our new haircut, the other one hates it. So sometimes this praise or blame has less to do with us or with whether what we did was good or bad, and more with just the preferences of the person who's praising or blaming. There can also be the situation where we might be blamed for something we didn't really do because somebody else wants to avoid blame, or where we don't get praise we deserve because the other person is jealous and just has a hard time being able to give it. So I think with this pair of praise and blame, it can be especially clear how things are often such a mix. You know, we rarely have only praise or only blame, even for the same action. Just as we really have pure pleasure or pure pain, but sometimes it's harder to see that. And also, you know, even when we're being praised by other people, on the outside, we might be experiencing blame on the inside, because in our own minds, we don't see ourselves as deserving of that praise. So working with praise and blame really requires some discernment. We really need to recognize this kind of mixed quality and transience of praise and blame. But on the other hand, we don't want to just ignore any feedback we get from other people and tell ourselves it's always going to change anyway. You know, if we just sort of do that, it's not really equanimity and wisdom. It's more like we just don't want to accept the criticism. So we have to know the difference. It's important to have the objectivity to listen to and accept constructive criticism, even though it's sometimes hard, but at the same time to realize when the blame is not really accurate, not really even about us. So discernment is needed. And I think also it's important to remember that we need to be able to accept praise as well as blame instead of always focusing on what we've done wrong. So, you know, either way, identification is a problem. Feeling we're not good enough to deserve praise, or being so attached to a sense of our own competence, or wanting to feel like we're competent, even if we truly don't, that we can't accept any sort of criticism. So now we come to that final pair of worldly wins, fame and ill repute. And as I was preparing this talk, I was kind of surprised to realize how complicated this pair actually is. You know, to begin with, even if Andy Warhol predicted that in modern times we'd all be famous for 15 minutes, fame and ill repute sometimes sound almost too big and too dramatic to be concerned about for ordinary people. They seem more like something that has to do with celebrities, criminals maybe, politicians. But I've also heard this pair translated as status and disgrace, or we might also think of them as status and lack of status, or good reputation versus bad reputation. Something like that, categories that are easier for us to relate to. So you can use your own definitions here. And while praise and blame are more about specific acts, fame and ill repute are more about our overall reputation and how we are regarded by others, not just one act, but just in general. So I think one of the things that's really difficult about this pair is that it often takes the form of an identity that's given to us by our family, our community, or our society. And maybe it's a good fit, maybe it's not, but no matter how good of a fit it is, it's never going to be really an accurate picture of who or what we are, since that's never really fixed. That's always changing. But even so, that identity often stays fixed in the minds of our group, in the minds of our family, and what's even more important, it becomes fixed in our own minds. You know, so just think about the labels we get in our youth as we're growing up, you know, like the wild girl, the bad boy, the smart one, the stupid one, the good one, the troublemaker. And we can feel that identity is a permanent part of us. And it's understandable if people make a whole career out of maintaining their reputation as the smart one or the beautiful one or the talented one. But I think we know that people can also make a whole career about maintaining their identity as the rebellious one or the troublemaker or even the screw up and the failure, not necessarily even aware that they're doing this maybe. And More problematic is that often the identities and the status and respect, or lack of it, are based on society's views on race, on gender, sexual preference, ethnicity, economic status, all of those things. So it's a really complicated mix. And we know that to some degree, well, we know that eventually all of them are transitory. Both of these are transitory. Sometimes we actually do foolish or thoughtless or harmless things to ruin our reputation, but a lot of times changes don't have much to do with us. You know, our current social media world, you know, the spotlight just goes boom, boom, boom from one to another. So people go from being talked about to being yesterday's news. But even if we're not in that environment, our status also changes as we age, when we change jobs, when we retire. Things that really don't have anything to do with ill repute, but they can bring us from being in the spotlight to being out of it. So if our identity is built around outside attention and recognition, well, clearly we're bound to suffer at some point. But it's also true that there's times when these identities can seem all too resistant to change when it comes to our family's views or society's views. We know how, you know, people can be looked down in spite of their good character, where others in a different social group maybe escape without a trace no matter what they do. And what about the person who really has done something harmful? They've been held account to it, recognize their wrongdoing, change their behavior. Do they have a way back to a place of good repute? Sometimes, but people can also be slow to forgive and forget. So with fame and ill repute, we see all these problems of prejudice, holding on to grudges, inability to forgive. There's a lot to consider here. There's a lot to consider. And I think it can be very difficult to deal with too. You know, the idea of being rejected by one's family, community, or society is really threatening. And I think being rejected unjustly because of prejudices or jealousy or mistaken views is even more painful. So difficult to work with. And as with praise and blame, working with fame and ill repute also requires a lot of discernment. You know, really seeing how attached we are to the ways that we see ourselves, our identities, even though they aren't a very solid or accurate picture of who we are. And also being able to see really clearly where these identities are something that comes from society and family, and where they actually come from things we've done. Being able to recognize that sometimes it's about our actions, but also sometimes about particular social groups we belong to, things our family is clinging on. So we don't have to take on those identities or labels that others give us, but recognize no matter who we are, we all do actions that are both praiseworthy and blameworthy and give our community reasons to think well of us and to think, you know, not so well of us. And I think also one of the things we need to recognize too, most of this talk is focused on how we can cope with our experience when we're buffeted back and forth by these worldly winds, when we're, you know, assailed by praise and blame and fame and ill repute. But it's also important to ask ourselves what kind of winds we're blowing ourselves onto other people. You know, are we too ready to find fault and criticize? Do we blame others when things don't go our way, even if they didn't have that much to do with it? Are we willing to give praise and acknowledgement when others do something good? I mean, that seems like it should be an easy thing, but it isn't always so easy. Do we label and judge others based on stereotypes without thinking about it? Do we tend to hold on to grudges and refuse to forgive even when others have made amends, but keep pigeonholing them into this category of ill repute? So those are things we need to think about too, not just what others do to us, but what we are doing to others in these categories. So there's a lot to reflect on here with these two pairs of vicissitudes, because we're so sensitive to them. They're so personal feeling. They're so entwined with our social and societal relationships. And I think above all, we really need to see their changeability and impermanence, and also to see how any label we put on anybody, including ourselves, is just a label and doesn't capture the true changing nature of that individual. So as we begin to reflect on these things and understand them more and more, we can actually be able to follow the advice that the Buddha gave in his sutta on the eight worldly winds that Jerry read and discussed last week. We can avoid being consumed with the worldly winds and meet them instead with equanimity. So let's sit together for a few minutes to close. And I'll read from the suttas. Gain and loss, fame and ill repute, pleasure and pain. These conditions among human beings are inconstant, impermanent, and subject to change. Knowing this, mindful, the intelligent person ponders these changing conditions. Desirable things don't charm the mind. Undesirable ones bring no resistance. Welcoming and rebelling are scattered, gone to their end, do not exist. Knowing the dustless, sorrowless state, they discern rightly, have gone beyond becoming to the further shore. So thank you all so much for your attention and listening. And now we have some time for group discussion on this subject. So I have a couple of questions for you to consider in your groups. And first, those of you who aren't able to join us for the group discussion, you're welcome to say goodbye now and do what you need to do today. And happy to have you here, even if you can't stay for the discussion. So for our discussion questions, I'd like you to consider which of these four pairs of vicissitudes are the biggest challenges for you. And it could be, you know, you might say all four of them, and that's a perfectly good answer. Okay. You know, which of these downsides seem most threatening might be another way to think of it, and are hard to cope with. Have you noticed anything about places where you cling and identify in considering this, or about where you experience relief from being buffeted by these worldly winds? So thinking about, you know, where are the big challenges and where have you found maybe some relief and help in working with these winds? So here we all are, everybody returning. Looks like we're all back from our group. So this is a time when you're welcome to share with our whole group any comments you might have about what you talked about in your small groups or about the topic in general, any questions that you might have that you'd like to ask. The floor is open. You can use that little hand symbol in reactions to let me know that you have a question and you want to, or comment and you want to say something. So the floor is open to anyone who would like to speak. Oh, Jerry.
Yeah, just a quick one. I appreciate what you said, Lyndall, about, you know, that praise and blame and, fame and ill repute, where we might have a real distorted notion about the fame. You know, we could have, who do I want to be famous among? I think it gets to be an opportunity for practice. You know, you could be the Jesse James or whatever, you know, that amongst your gang of thieves, you're wonderful, and all of a sudden you become a snitch, or you become I'm not going to do that. So I guess it's, in terms of practice, opportunity to practice, what's your overall intention around how do you want to be move on that economies?
Yeah, that is very true. I mean, it's sort of funny because there isn't only fame, there's also notoriety, you know, in that sense that it's ill repute, but boy, you're really getting a lot of recognition for it. So there is that. There is that, yeah. It's a complicated topic, and I think sometimes even recognizing that we want recognition or we want to be noticed, because it's easy to say, oh, I don't want to be famous, and yet in our small circle we might really, really want to be quote unquote famous within our small group of friends and family and stuff like that. So thank you. Charlotte?
Yes, I shared in my little group that we had a competition for people to decorate their doors on the outside. And I decorated mine and I won the prize because I was just about the only one who decorated. But when it was all done, a neighbor down the hall, she decorated her door also with paper like I did with mine. And at first I was just really, oh, she's taking away my thunder. What's the deal here? I got all jealous and then I thought about, oh, you know, I really enjoyed decorating the door. It was a lot of fun. And then I looked at her door again and she did a really nice job. So I went through the whole cycle of, anyway, that's all I have to say.
Yeah, thank you. That's for sharing that. And I agree. I mean, as I've been thinking about this topic, I've really noticed that too, how often we go through that kind of cycle over things that aren't that important. It's kind of embarrassing, but I'm at least happy to be aware enough of it so that I don't actually go out there and do anything or say anything about it. I just kind of know, oh, I'm having these feelings. But we're so sensitive sometimes, and it's so easy to be envious. It just really strikes me. It really is true sometimes that I see that sympathetic joy is a difficult Brahma Vihara because those reactions are just right there. So thank you. And let's see. We have a comment from Sean and Bruce, too.
Hi.
Hi.
I noticed that we live in a community where we have raised garden beds, and there's probably about 30 of them, and we won an award for having the best garden bed, and how embarrassed I was. I mean, I want to be recognized, but then when I'm recognized, I had become embarrassed. Mm-hmm. Oh, please. Oh, I mean, we knew that we were called to a meeting and we knew that we were going to be given the prize, even though no one had said, and we didn't want to go. Right? And the people applauding, I go, God, it's really strange. I just wanted to comment on that. I want praise, yeah, but then when I get it, I don't want it.
Isn't that funny? That is, but that's just so typical of this whole topic. It's like, yeah, hard to accept the praise when it comes. And yet, if it doesn't happen, you know, I mean, maybe if you hadn't gotten anything, you might have been thinking, what's wrong with our garden bed? So it's just so bizarre. And so weird. Yeah, go ahead, please.
I can remember, it probably comes from childhood, as most things do. I can remember my sitting at the dinner table with my mother and family, and my mother would say, after she'd say about what she just, the food she just made, she said, oh, this is really good, even though I do say so myself. You know, like she shouldn't say anything good about herself. You
know? That saying is very common in my family as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say, oh, mother, how could you say such a thing?
Yeah, I mean, this just really sort of brings to light how complex this whole issue is and how sensitive we are and how mixed our reactions are.
Amazing. And then if I say something like on a Zoom thing and it happens to be anything personal, then after I'm done, I'm going, oh God, why did I say that? I start blaming myself for having opened up my big mouth.
Yeah, it's funny. Let's see. Now, Carla, maybe this should be our final one so we have time for our closing and announcements. Please go ahead.
I'm just appreciating these stories of things that we experience every day. And it's making me aware of one of my reactions to my reaction is to hide how I'm reacting. And that makes me kind of so I just want to be like, tell myself in those moments to practice being strong and just feeling it. So I'm not going into hiding mode, which is really bad. I hate it. So thank you for bringing this up. And thank you for the Dharma talk today.
Yeah. Well, thank you for your comment. And that's a really interesting comment too, about the going into the hiding mode. I mean, like, it's one thing if we have a reaction and we know it, but we don't say anything because it would be troublesome to everybody around us to say something. But I think what you're talking about is more about that hiding mode of not even wanting to admit to ourselves that we even have those feelings. You know, just sort of like, oh, no, I don't have any of that. Or that kind of spiritual bypass of, oh, I'm not even going to think about this because it's so impermanent. When really we're feeling a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So I appreciate your sharing about that and your awareness of it. And I think it's an area where we all have a lot of work to do. I certainly know that that's something that comes up for me a lot in being really honest with myself about what I'm actually feeling.
Yeah, just letting myself feel it. Be brave enough to feel it. That's all I'm thinking.
Even if it's embarrassing. It.
What's that?
Even if it's embarrassing.
Yes.
Thank you. I'm really glad that you brought up that point because I think it's an important aspect of this whole topic. So thanks to all for your great comments. And now I will turn the floor back over to Suze.
Really appreciate this opportunity for practicing together and talking about the Dhamma. And just as we wish for ourselves and those we love that we can all abide in peace and well-being, we extend that wish outward. May all beings abide in peace and well-being, awake and be free. if for some reason we don't see you next week, then Happy New Year and have a safe holiday.